As a criminal lawyer in India, Pallavi Garg aims to create a broader platform for women in male-dominated fields. Welcome, Pallavi.
Thank you.
I've known you a long time.
Yes. Your childhood, my slightly older childhood.
Yes. And you've been a part of my school.
Friends.
Yes. So, what has it been like to be a woman in a man's field?
Honestly, there are a lot of positives and negatives that come along with it. But I think more than anything, it's the thrill of being the woman in a man's field. And, you know, you're trying to make a mark. And I'm very thankful to a lot of people, including a lot of men, including my mentors, who've been extremely supportive. So while I'm there in a man's world, I've also had support from men. And, you know, there's been a lot of people who've encouraged me along the way.
And when we speak about going beyond the border, I think we've had discussions before where you say that you knew from a really long time ago that this is what you wanted to do. So what is that one thing that inspired you or like gave you that little tickle that you need to go beyond the border?
So for me, I think since my school days, I knew I wanted to be a criminal lawyer. And I saw Mr. Ramjet Malani, who's a very, very prominent lawyer, and give an interview on screen. And the way he spoke and he was talking about, you know, at that time, I don't even remember what the subject matter of the interview was, but I remember the way he spoke and the way he spoke about law. And all I could think of in that moment was that that's exactly how I want to be. You know, the man knew so much, the way he spoke, the way he commanded the entire audience. And I was just mesmerized. And since that day, I remember I searched about him. I read up about him. I read his books. I read his articles. And I was just fascinated by who he was. And then I started reading a little bit of criminal law. My mother's side of the family, that is my maternal grandfather, my maternal uncle, they're also criminal lawyers in UP. So when I would go back for my summer vacations to my Nanu's house, I would see, you know, the clients coming and, you know, those law books. And sometimes I would just go through something and I was very fascinated. I would love reading through some files, and though I didn't get access to that, but, you know, I would just keep trying and I would tell my Nanu's clerk, ke, acha, aaj court mein kya hona hai? You know, what's the new interesting case? And I was just very fascinated. And I think I'm amongst the very few lucky people who gets to say that they're living their childhood dream.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I didn't even know what I wanted to do till I was like 20-something.
Yeah, I'm living a childhood fantasy. So I don't know if this was what...
No, that's fantastic. Which is why, like, you're over a decade in and you already have, like, your own chamber, which is fabulous. You worked with some of the renowned lawyers like Kapil Sibal, and I think you still are.
So I don't work with him. I do brief him on matters. We engage with them, and I've been very fortunate to have the opportunity to brief him in certain matters. Mm-hmm. I think just engaging with great minds like that, you learn through osmosis, you know. Just breathing the same air, I think you get to learn a lot. Yeah.
Who are some of the prominent lawyers that have played like an important role in your growth over these years?
So I think, of course, like, you know, as I mentioned, Mr. Jet Malani was the reason why I got into this profession. And along the way, I've had my mentors, you know, my mentor in specific, Mr. Dubey. He's a senior advocate. And he has been someone who's been instrumental in me becoming a lawyer who reads the file, who works on merit, who works on the craft. The kind of pains my mentor took to teach me with a paper and a pen, and even some of my seniors from my college, till date, you know, there are times when I call them up and I'm like, you know, I'm stuck. What do I do? Or, you know, just brainstorm with me. So it really helps that you have an ecosystem around you that has, where you can even bounce off ideas. And I'm very fortunate to have had a lot many people to have given me that support.
Yeah. I mean, I also do remember you telling me in a conversation that, of course, Ramjet Malani has played a great role when you were really young, but you also did get a great opportunity to do an internship with him.
Yes.
Which kind of framed the coming years.
Yes, and I mean, you know, when I saw that man work,
yeah,
that's when I realized the kind of grit it will take from me to be a lawyer. I saw him when he was already a really big name, and I would still see him working long hours. And till date, you know, there are times when I feel burnt out, and I tell myself that, you know, and I think that's what keeps me going, that, you know, that man at that age was still working. You have no excuse. You still have to keep on working. And I think working on my craft, just reading up about law, I mean, it's a very funny thing that a lot of people say, that law is a very, you know, evil mistress. It leaves no time for anything else. It consumes a lot of my time, but I think since I enjoy reading it so much, I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I don't mind the hours.
I mean, regardless of the gender, I think as a layman person has just like an outer idea of what law is like. I think whenever we are fighting against like rapists or murderers, and then you always have like defendant lawyers, and we're criticizing them as human beings for being a part of that. But I think you as well have had some cases. Why don't you share like your experience on those cases and explain to us like why is it okay, like why we shouldn't judge those people who are still defending someone who may be a criminal?
So would you judge a doctor who treats a rapist?
Oh, I'm supposed to answer?
Yeah.
Okay. I would maybe.
A man has committed a murder in whatever the circumstances, and he gets injured while murdering someone, and a doctor treats him as well. Would you judge that doctor?
I mean, I would. But that's wrong as well. And I think...
What if that person dies because the doctor doesn't treat him?
See, at the end of the day, we are also like always advocating for capital punishment, so we wouldn't feel bad. Again, this comes from a fact that we just know the outer idea. We just know like a black and white. And like... you have said, and we also know that law is like 50,000 shades of gray. So it's, there is no black and white. And this is something I understand only when I talk to lawyers. And I, like, of course, I feel like there is a right and wrong. Like, I feel like women are oppressed. But at the same time, like, there are a huge amount of, like, men out there who are also facing the bad side of law because of fake cases. And we don't focus on that because, of course, women have been oppressed for so long that we focus on just this area. But if you are in the field, you have to kind of balance it out as well, right?
So that is where a lawyer and a defense lawyer becomes very important, right? Now, for example, a defense lawyer is not just a mouthpiece of a client. None of us are. We're given a set of evidence that we scrutinize. If there is any deficiency in evidence, you know, we assist the court in that. We're officers of the court. We are trying to ascertain what the truth is. And if a person is actually innocent, they shouldn't be punished. There can be situations where someone is framed or someone is falsely accused, right? They shouldn't suffer the brunt of a system. Also, the criminal system in itself or the legal system in itself, it's very grueling. It takes very long, right? Now, if imagine an innocent person has been embroiled in a false case. The defense lawyer's job is to find the deficiencies in evidence, in investigation, and point it out to the court. We are not taking a judgment call as to whether someone is guilty or not. That is left to the decision of the court. We as defense lawyers are just pointing out certain facts that might be missing, certain mitigating circumstances. Now, for example, a child who has seen violence growing up has somewhere also, the violence has become part of his life. He's also normalized it. So what you and I probably would say, you know, that person just goes around hitting people, or, you know, just using abusive language. In his culture, that might be or where he's normalized. Coming from. It's very normalized. Mm-hmm. Now, these are mitigating circumstances that, okay, if someone is found to be guilty, what is the extent of punishment that should be given to them? And when that punishment is, administered, these kind of circumstances play a role. While the law is written down in black and white, you have so many shades that are different because there is no act which is ever in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
To understand the entire circumstances around it mm-hmm. is what a defense lawyer assists the court.
Yeah. I mean, I would like two examples if you could share. Like, since you also represent a lot of, I don't know, like pre-accused criminals, mm-hmm. if mm-hmm. that's what I can say.
Accused persons.
Yes, accused persons. And is there like a case where you could say that someone was falsely accused and you represented them? Or like a case where someone was actually found guilty? Like, you know, just an example of like all these, the other side basically of gray that we don't really see.
So for example, you know, there was a case that I was doing where a couple was in a live-in relationship, and when the live-in relationship ended on very bad terms, subsequently the prosecutrix, or the girl, she put a case of rape against the my client, for example. Now, while there might have been a lot of discord in the relationship, you know, they might have been in a verbally abusive relationship or emotionally abusive relationship, but there was the act of rape as defined as an offense was not committed by the person. Right? Now, I understand there are a lot of emotions that are going on even from the prosecutrix side, but the fact remained that he hadn't committed that offense and he was subsequently acquitted. But that itself, I mean, I was given the case when it was towards the fag end. The case had been going on since 2014. And by 2019, and someone lived with that label, right? It's not very easy to even be in a society, because obviously we all, and I as a lawyer, I'm sitting here and I say, yes, while I defend those, but there's obviously a judgment that comes along with it. Our society does judge people who have been, you know, accused of committing certain offenses. Like, I remember we were talking, and I remember I was in school or probably just in college, and I remember I had read a news headline which said, oh, a terrorist son scored very high marks in his 10th class boards. That was the label that was given. And
because it not only affects the person, but also
his family yeah. everyone around
yeah,
him,
yeah.
you know, and that's why in false cases, that's why the whole criminal jurisprudence and the criminal justice system works mm-hmm. in such a way that, okay, we might let 10 accused persons go, but one innocent person should not suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the suffering is grave, you know, being in the prison system, it's not easy. And there are various checks and balances, you know, it's not a system that's just operating mm-hmm. on some whim and fancy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the evidence needs to be collected in a particular way. The investigation is done in a particular way. How we conduct trials in court, how a judge presides over a court, that is yeah. all laid down. But everything else, you know, the factors that are external factors, those have to be pointed yeah. out. And, you know, there are, of course, cases of false cases, mm-hmm. but there are, I think, umpteen number of cases which are true and mm. where, you know, justice needs to be served. And defense yeah. lawyers' role in that becomes to assist the court.
So in this field where there is, I mean, we, again, I'm saying as a layman person who's reading news or a journalist who's, even when I have to dig deeper into like a very gruesome case like a murder or a rape, it really affects with my mental health. Even when I had to work on the war, I think after some time I had to block myself because I just didn't know what was happening with me anymore. But you're dealing with that for a really long time. So, I mean, how do you let that, like, the whatever is happening to your mental health, how do you, like, deal with it?
So, I think it's an occupational hazard also that you become a little desensitized. That does happen over time, right? The same thing you're reading again and again and again. So there's a part of you that learns to, I think, deal with it in that way. It's also very, very important for me, for example, to let, you know, blow off the steam. So, like, I'll go for a run or sometimes, you know, if something bothers me, I think acknowledging that something is bothering me is very important. And probably just discussing it with, you know, people who've been at the bar for longer. Like, you know, there are a lot of women at the bar, criminal bar as well. And just having a word with them that how did they deal with such a situation, it really helps, you know. It's like I said, I was given this advice when I was starting out my career, that build an ecosystem around you. And I think I am definitely a very social animal. I need my friends, family.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
Yeah. So, you know, like if something is bothering me, I do need to discuss it with. I think more than counseling a person who is, you know, not been in the field for that long, it rather helps when you have seniors. Mm. And I mean, at least I can say for a lot of seniors, they are very, very helpful. You know, they're approachable. You can reach out to them. I think it's our own, you know, hesitation that we don't reach out to people. Yeah. But I think, and that's in general in life, I think, you know.
I think it's like a taboo to ask for help.
Yes.
Even now. Yes. Which
and
is bad.
I need help at all times. We do. So
we do.
I ask for it.
Yeah, that's
shamelessly
great.
So.
You should. But also, now give me like an example of one of the gruesome most cases.
Okay, so for example, there was a case that I was dealing with. I think two cases that really affected me were, once I was dealing with a case pertaining to a child who had been subjected to a sexual offense. And the gruesome details, and the child was around 7-8 years old. And, you know, when the child in his testimony before the court gave out the details, somewhere I was really shaken up. But, you know, that disturbed me for a lot, many days. Because for a child to give such gruesome details means that those details are imprinted on their mind. Okay. So, for example, like, you know, there was one case I was working on. And in that, they'd smashed the head of the deceased so that the person could not be identified.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they'd chopped off some of the body parts so that the identification could not happen. And what could be the recourse in that? What was the way that law would operate? Because if a victim could not be identified, you know, what would be the, like, you know, or where the body is not found? Mm. And we know that someone has committed a murder. How do you prove that? So all these questions of law definitely come up. And to that extent, of course, you know, they intrigue you and push you. But yes, of course, sometimes you do wonder that, you know, where is humanity going?
Mm.
And, you know, when you hear about crimes against children, you feel so scared, you know, because at that point, it really shakes you up that, okay, you know, this is happening. This is a thing that's happening around me that I'm being spoken to about. Mm. And I'm not only supposed to defend someone, but I'm also supposed to be okay with the society gravitating towards such heinous offenses.
Yeah. And I mean, you have also have to see the reports, right? And it's not just in the air, but you have to go through everything.
Yes. And
with
it
like
does
too much scrutiny. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Like a doctor.
And yes. And
which is crazy.
Like, you know, sometimes going through post-mortem reports and all, it does get gruesome, you know. And but I think you learn to deal with it, you know, learning to just close from that for a little while and coming back to it when you're a little better prepared.
Yeah. I mean, even when I like research online about women lawyers or women criminal lawyers, rather, I think like in the first 10, there's also like black and white photos of people because there are just that many. But let's say the last 5 years, the numbers have increased.
Definitely.
Yeah. So like, what do you feel is required now that wasn't there before? And what is it that is implemented which has helped more women to come into this field?
I think one of the biggest, you know, measurement of women joining the workforce more was during COVID. Because remote working and, you know, video conferencing. And I believe there was one comment made by Justice Chandrachur in one of his interviews where he said that, you know, the women participation in litigation had increased during COVID because they had a facility like work from home. Obviously, there are things which have helped. I have seen those changes also happening. But of course, like, you know, even when I joined, a lot many changes had happened by then. For example, infrastructure, you know, washroom, simple thing as like having like, you know, female hygiene products in the washrooms, making it more accessible for us. And also the I think acceptance of women in workforce, a lot of people also accepting that yes, women are a good resource to have in their office because they are able to deliver on their work. And I think for those, there have been far too many women who've broken the glass ceiling for us there. They paved the way and it's definitely helped. And that's why we see, obviously it's not happened to an extent as it's happened in the other fields. Yeah. It's far slower because there are a lot of mental blocks as well.
Yeah.
Especially regarding safety. Also like, you know, a lot of times I get asked by say interns or other girls like, you know, going to the police station and you have to go at night and it's not safe. And I always said, say this to people, A, you don't have to do anything where you don't feel safe. Draw that boundary. Be very clear and be very vocal about it. For example, my family is not okay with me going to a police station at night. And, you know, there are restrictions. So let's be very candid about those. And as I said, the acceptance in the workforce has become as such that even your seniors or even your clients somewhere, you know, or you can ask some of your colleagues, okay, you know, I can't go to the police station at night. Yeah. Can you handle this for me?
Yeah, it shouldn't be frowned upon when you do that.
It shouldn't be frowned upon. But at the same time, also understanding your own limitation. You know, there is no, I don't think we need to be those people who are like, you know, I hate this idea that people have, oh, women are supposed to be super women.
Yeah.
No, we are not supposed to be super women, you know. I can feel uncomfortable and I can ask for help if in a situation I need that help.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that you're talking about it because even like at a very small level, I remember like someone banged into my car and we were just having a fight in the middle of the highway and this Jat guy comes in his HR Thar and he's like, madam, aap side pe kar lo. And I was so like heated in the moment that I was like, aap jaiye, main dekh lungi and all. And I said it like twice and then I saw his face and then it suddenly struck me that who did I say what to? And I think for 3 days straight, whenever I was going on the highway, I was scared of every thar that I might have hurt his ego. And it did make me realize that I am very aware of the fact that there are some things that I just shouldn't do and not be like, I'm a woman, so like, it's okay for me to do it because my safety is more important. What if I'm killed in that place? Who's going to care if I'm a woman?
Also, I think being smart is very important. You know, just having a reaction and then expecting no repercussions. That is a very ideal world. Unfortunately, we don't live in one.
Yeah. And I think like that jump happened too fast from like us fighting for feminism and it becoming all about women and then slowly like having to understand that it's not about women, but it's about equality.
Right.
And that is, I think, very important. And that's why, I mean, you're here. And it's also very important for women to understand that, which I think if they're, I feel, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, if things like that are incorporated in probably law schools, then maybe it's easier for more women or would be like one stepping stone for them to understand that if they want to be in criminal law, they don't have to be either extreme.
Yes, and I think it's something that we also need to talk about at school level also for girls that, you know, you don't need to be, I mean, any movie you see where, you know, they portray a woman character who's strong, they'll show she's doing everything, you know. She's perfect looking, she's cooking and, you know, she's wearing an apron and making dinner for her children. She's working day and night and she's breaking the glass ceilings. I definitely do not think I can be a superwoman. I need a lot of help to go about my day. And I am very categorical about it. Yeah. And I think somewhere the idea of feminism that we are enough and that we can do everything. Yes, I can do everything, but I don't need to
do everything, of course.
Right? Yeah. And it's okay to understand my own limitations. Yeah. I'm not bound by my limitations. Oh, I can't do it. Of course, I can do something. Yeah. I choose not to do it. Or I no longer wish to do that.
Yeah, and you shouldn't be judged for it as well. Yeah. And in casual conversations that we've had, which have been a billion of them, I think we also speak about the fact that you wanted to be a criminal lawyer and break that boundary is because you feel like people have been misinformed about law a lot, and especially criminal law. And that is something I think that also led you to be so vocal in this field and reach a place today where you're also in the legal aid panel of the High Court, right? So what do you have to say for that? Like, how do you wish to, or have you eradicated this idea of misinformation?
I think the misinformation, and you know in today's time more than any time before, that for every information, there is 1,000 misinformation that's happening. And I think we spoke about this, that digital arrest was nothing but a manifestation of misinformation. But yes, there was a lot of misinformation even I had that, you know, I will be required to do X, Y, Z and A, B, C. No, you know, those myths I had to break for myself. And that is something I am trying with a lot of my female colleagues, that, you know, I try to break those myths. The one myth that is not still broken for me is that, you know, yes, law is very grueling as a field.
Yeah,
and I tell everyone that you need
to. That's not a myth.
Yes. I mean, I'm waiting for this myth to be broken. But till now, I'm just experiencing that it's very grueling. Yeah. And to that extent, I tell everybody that it is grueling. Yeah. It's very demanding.